Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Colorado Rapids podcast. On today's episode, we are going to talk about the Rapids' last-minute loss at home here against Houston over the weekend. Look ahead to the game against LAFC. That's a midday game on Saturday, which will be really nice. And we are going to talk to a newish member, about a year now, a member of the front office, Ruth Fahey. Really interesting conversation with her about everything in her past, but also what she does here for the Colorado Rapids. So I'm Jordan Angeli alongside Mike Rivolo. Drew Moore, what's up, my favorite guys? How are you?
They're pretty good.
She seemed more excited when she said my name than yours.
That's typically what happens when people see me.
So. Mike, it was a joke. Come on.
I deal with it. I manage. I know who I am. I know what I'm about.
I know who I am.
But always nice to see you guys. Every week, getting to hop on the pod with you guys.
I know. I'm ready for this, like, spring weather to stop springing, right? It's snow warm. Let's just skip the snow and just get straight to the warmth.
Colorado spring can't make up its mind.
It can't. Yeah. Every year I feel the same way. And you know what? At least every year we have some Colorado Rapids soccer. Not as good of a result as everybody would have hoped over the weekend. So let's dive into it. The Colorado Rapids losing in the last minutes of the game, to the Houston Dynamo over the weekend, 1-0. It was a heartbreaker, Drew. My goodness. It felt like the Rapids had it right there in the palm of their hands so many times. Let's just talk big takeaways first. What's your biggest takeaway from the match?
Tough, obviously, with the way the game finished. And I'll just, you know, straight into it. The play needs to be stopped for a head injury, right? It wasn't, and the Rapids didn't deal with it, you know, and I think really at that point, and we'll discuss it, the Rapids probably should have been up a goal or two because of the way they played, because of the chances they created. And so a frustrating night overall, obviously, because you come into the game with a lot of momentum and feeling good, and then you go out and you play pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it, the final third quality just was lacking a bit, you know, and when you don't put teams away and they stay in the game, they start to believe, even though they're time wasting from minute one, which that was pretty evident. And it's a cruel game sometimes, and things happen.
It is. Gosh, I love this game so much, but it is so cruel sometimes. You're right. The game should have been stopped. That's the protocol for referees. Mm-hmm. So if there is a head injury, the protocol is to stop the game to get the player with the head injury treatment. I think it's a great protocol because we have seen very difficult head injuries and how that can change your career in an instant. So we want to get those players treated as soon as possible. I think the Rapids, too, had an opportunity to just, like, it's hard, right? It's not your responsibility to stop the play in that moment, but could you, instead of crossing it, just play it out and get your player treatment? I think there's an opportunity for that too. I don't think it was a foul, but it was because you're taught to protect yourself when you go up for headers. But it was a terrible outcome, right? Not just for Maxu and what he is dealing with now, but for the team and what that moment then created in the transition. So, yeah, it's not the referee's fault that the team lost. It's not the team's fault that they didn't put the ball out of bounds, right? Like, I feel like there is responsibility to be had, and I feel like there was a lot of responsibility taken post-game by coaches, by players, to be better in those moments. If you had to think about this game, Mike, now that you've had a couple of days, what do you take away in a positive from what you saw from the Rapids out on the field?
After speaking with coaches and some of the players, that they feel that even with some of the losses that they suffered this year, they still felt like they could have won or gotten more out of a draw, like mm-hmm. in Seattle, as we discussed previously. The mentality, I think, is right with the group. Drew, you would know for sure because you're out of training with these guys and you're with them every day. But from what I see and from what I've been discussing with some of the players and coaches is that the mentality's there. Like, for them, it's like if they lose, like they feel like they should be winning these games. Right, there's some accountability with some moments that they're not taking advantage of with scoring or some being a little bit more fluid in possession, but they're willing to take that ownership. You mentioned, Jordan, that some of the, you know, coach Chris Armas and Georgie, they were available for post-game press conferences, and Georgie specifically mentioned that with Hafa, right? If Hafa's not scoring, I don't think that's just solely on him. Is that something I'm not doing, right? Mm-hmm. Where am I not providing the passes that I should to put Hafa in a good position to score goals or at least be in dangerous positions. So the players will be the first to take accountability, that they're not going to deflect that by any means whatsoever. So they can realize that they're missing some portions to their game, some moments that they can take advantage of. But the optimism is still there that they feel that they should still be getting more results, more points, more goals out of all these games they've been playing so far.
If you haven't listened to Georgie postgame, like, that is a guy I want to play with. I want, like, his accountability from everything. From, he talked about the PK that 2 weeks ago. He talked about taking responsibility for that. He talked about being able to, as a 10, feed a 9 and get on the board, about how he feels like every game he leaves thinking, I didn't do a good enough job. And then he has to go back and watch and see, okay, I'm picking up the ball in good spots. I'm getting there, right, with this group, and it takes time. But man, I listened to that and I was like, sign me up to be on his team.
Absolutely. And let me keep going with that theme, because I sat next to Lalas Abubakar after the match, right, who played extremely well considering it was his first minutes of the year. That's not an easy position to come in and things be seamless. I figured they would, because Lalas is such a professional. His mentality is unreal. And his biggest thing after a match like that, where you maybe felt hard done by the ref, was, I should have organized the play better after Maxu went down. Mm. And that's taking accountability. That's an unbelievable mentality. That's the kind of person, whether he's playing regularly or not, I want to have in my locker room. It wasn't about the ref. It wasn't about them scoring late. It was what should I have done better in that situation? And Lalas didn't skip a beat all night. And it's hard to blame him for that goal when all that was going on. But to have that kind of mentality, and so I'm glad you brought that up, Mike, because this is a team that takes ownership, that has the right things at the front of their minds after feeling like you've been hard done. Mm-hmm. They're moving in the right direction.
And I think on the field, I saw so many moments where I saw some, like, overload, some 2-3-man progressions in the channel where we see a cutback like we haven't seen before, an overlap that leads to a combination getting to the end line 1v1 by yourself. I felt like for a team sitting in a little bit lower of a block, the Rapids had some answers when it came to how will we break it down. Now, the hardest part is when you're doing that, I don't know, maybe Drew, this is actually for you, because you've been a part of a team who knows every time a team comes into DSPG.
GP.
I knew that was going to come out right. When they come to Dick's Sporting Goods Park, I should just use the whole word, they're going to adapt the way they play most of the time. In trainings, are you working specifically week in and week out how to break down a low, maybe not a low, low block, but a lower block, knowing, okay, this is what we predict Houston is going to play like, or looking forward, predict LAFC is going to look like, but they could very well be an X.
Absolutely. I think, and not even just here, when they go on the road, you look at some of the players on this Rapids team, and you have to be prepared for some high energy, some high pressure, and the Rapids doing well with the wing progressing and getting into dangerous spots, mm-hmm. right? It's not just at home. With the Rapids right now, it's the final product. And so they continue to drive home, you know, still getting into these spots, still replicating it in training. You know, they put restrictions on defenders, where they can go, you know, how deep they're allowed to sit, all these things to try to replicate, you know, what teams are going to come in here and do. And LAFC comes in here this weekend, you know, there's a very good chance they're going to sit a little bit deeper as well, because this is just what teams do. They make changes. They make personnel changes. They make tactical changes, because this is a difficult place to come and play. It really is. And the Rapids really put you on your heels. And if Houston can come in here and sit so deep and waste time, LAFC is going to think, yeah, we have different players. I would say we have better players, but that might be the formula for us as well in a difficult place to come play.
Georgie said in postgame, when we get into the final third, we have to be creative and express ourselves. And it really is this almost a flip of a switch of, like, here's how we progress and here's how we get here. But once we get here, be you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the team is able to do that right now? Or do you feel like there's a weight on them saying a little bit like, we're not quite performing how we should in the final third? And you know, when you're pressing the game and you're trying to do too much, it's like you can't be creative when you're overthinking things. How do you balance that, or how do you get out of that mindset?
It's tough. And I think, yes, I think the players are putting a lot of pressure on themselves. Every player puts pressure on himself to go out and perform. No matter what the score of the game is, no matter who you're playing, no matter where you're playing, every player puts pressure on themselves. You look at the underlying numbers and stats of this Rapids team, and they're at the top of deep progressions, right? Getting deep into another team's territory. Passes in the box, shot distance. They're closer to goal than most other teams, right? These are important metrics that you don't really think about unless you actually break it down. The Rapids are getting into great spots. They're putting teams on their heels. They're making teams run towards their own goal, which you hate to do as a defender, right? And so now it is just putting it all together, right? Being a little creative, being a little bit more dynamic, mm-hmm. being a little bit more brave, making the near post run that nobody wants to make that might open up the back post run, you know, all these little things. But just keep doing what you're doing. You're close. You're so close. Yeah. And it is that final product that we talk about that takes the most time to come sometimes. And I think it will. And you can't stop doing what you're doing because these numbers are showing you're getting into the spots that you want mm-hmm. to get into.
And just giving up 2 shots on goal, 6 shots in total, the Rapids are showing that the defensive principles are working, especially regains and counter pressures and where they're picking the ball back up in attacking spots. For you, Mike, you got to give a little shout, a little love to a player that really impressed you over the weekend.
I've been waiting forever to give some Terp love.
Forever?
Forever. Forever.
Forever.
To give some Terp love to Kamani Stewart Baines. Drew saw him in preseason when he first came into the fold with the Super Draft. I mean, everybody, right? This is all new faces that we're seeing in Mexico in the first leg of preseason. And when I saw Kamani kind of trying to find his groove a little bit with some small-sided scrimmages and whatnot, you see him and he has something that you can't really teach or give a player. They either have it or they don't.
Swag. They call it swag.
Whatever you want to call it.
They used to call it swag, Jordan. It's probably a new one.
I call something different now. You're right.
Guys, but that's what I would call it.
We're getting old, guys. But for me, Kamani has that. I think all it is right now is a matter of him taking the time to transition into what is the professional game after spending a few months really killing it at the college level with the University of Maryland. Go Terps. Hey, I got to give the Terps some love. Go Terps, man.
Do it.
What's a Terp?
But Kamani, with the few minutes that he had towards the end of the game in the second half against Houston, you could see some sparks, some moments. You see what he's capable of doing. And I feel like it's almost like a microcosm of the Rapids a little bit. Like you see those moments, what this team is capable of. Let's see more consistency from it. Let's see it over and over and over again happen and see the end product. So for me, Kamani, with the few moments he had in 1v1s, dribbling past Brad Smith, it was really nice and encouraging to see the way he was able to kind of show off what he's really about. It was very nice to see that.
Yeah, if you're a creative, quick player, put me in at the end of the game and watch me just dice up some defenders. I thought Kamani did a really good job. I thought Johnny Lewis did a good job coming in as well, just creating some different threats in the channels and the Rapids had posed previously. It was a tough one to swallow. And I think there was a different level of, I don't think frustration's a word, because Chris Armas said, I'm not frustrated. I know it's there. And I think that the team feels that same way. But there was a different feeling with this loss than before. It's like almost like this isn't happening to us, like we're not letting it go this way. And I do think that the reaction now is going to be really important because it feels different, right? I don't know, especially this weekend when you are welcoming in Denny Bawanga and LAFC, because I think I can say it now like that, because he wasn't scoring goals. And then last weekend happened and LAFC put 5 on Nashville. Granted, one of those was down a player, losing their goalkeeper to a red card late in the game. But the variety at which this LAFC team can come at you, it's a day game in Colorado. Like we just said, it could be nice, it could be not nice, right? Cold, chillier. So you don't know if the heat or that is going to affect you for a day game, but it could be 65 on Saturday. How do you stop LAFC?
Good question, because they can hurt you in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I still think LAFC are at their best when they're attacking in transition.
Yeah.
Because of Denny Bowen.
And that's been a switch over the last few years under Turundolo, where it went from a little bit more possession oriented to, all right, you can come and we're going to go.
Which they can still hurt you in possession as well. They bring back Edward Atuesta. They still have Ily Sanchez, who can pick out a pass the gap
his eyes
that
closed.
A golf ball can finish. You know, like, but I do think they're so dynamic going forward that you have to be concentrated and focused for 90 plus minutes. That makes it sound so easy. You just have to be so disciplined, because they will hurt you if you make just the tiniest mistake, right? Mm-hmm. The tiniest giveaway. If you're not, you know, 2 yards to your left when you should be 2 yards to your left, you know, with Bowanga, with Bogush, with Oliveira, who scored, and you know, he might be feeling himself a little bit right now. They've got this young Venezuelan who came off the bench and looked like a really, really good player. I know he has a couple times now this season. They defend well with Aaron Long leading their back line.
Watch out for Ryan Hollingshead coming forward to score.
They don't have any holes.
Yeah, there's
in
no
their
holes.
Lineup, you know, and so you have to be so focused, and you have to be opportunistic going the other way as well.
Sometimes those are the best games to play in, though.
The Rapids have done really well against LAFC. I don't think LAFC have won here in three or four.
I was just thinking about that. Like 2021, we beat them to win best in the West. 2022, beat them 2-0-1. It could have been 5-0, to be honest. And then held them to a draw last year.
They haven't had a lot of luck. No, they haven't had a lot of luck coming to Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And so I think that's going to be the key. For me, I think the blueprint I think to follow, which is probably the most obvious one in terms of how to prevent that transition or stop that transition as much as you can from LAFC, is what the Columbus crew did to them in MLS Cup. Ily Sanchez could not get on the ball, and none of their midfielders could get on the ball. So there was no moment that you couldn't have someone like them or Carlos Vela at the time find that outlet ball into space for Denny Bowanga, Christian Oliveira, for any of them to run into space and go in transition, which is their strength right now. So if there's a blueprint in terms of how to stop LAFC, that would be it in terms of what the Columbus crew did, which they played a virtually perfect game in MLS Cup to win it last year. I think that's the key, is just to prevent those outlet passes from the midfield, particularly from Eduardo Tuesta, Ilya Sanchez, from those guys, to prevent a Bowanga, Christian Oliveira, whoever you
Timothy
put up
Tillman.
He's very mobile and good on the ball as well. So they have a lot of dangerous pieces. But I think with the Rapids knowing the high press that they like to apply, if they are very diligent about that, it doesn't matter who you put in midfield, they won't provide those outlet passes to a Bowanga, Oliveira, or anybody else you put on the wing. So hopefully that could be the key for the Rapids this weekend.
Hear me out. Because I'm kind of thinking of something.
Like this.
Yeah. I feel like, what if Georgi Mihailovic plays a nine, a false nine, and you almost at moments have him coming back and you overload the spaces next to Ilya? So you have Cole back in a higher position, and Georgi is floating and on the back line at times, but also popping into space, especially on that left side where I personally like where he can create there. Cole likes to get forward and beyond. I think that depends on Jack and where he's at in his progression. But against a team like LAFC, especially, they've got strong center backs. But if you can start to pull them out of spaces, I don't know. That's just a look from me that I think could be really interesting.
Well, when you have two center backs like Murillo and Long, they want to just sit in front of their goal. And if you hate
pull
getting pulled out and opened up. So I don't know. Maybe you need to have a word.
I'll have a word.
Yeah, cool. All right.
With the coach and the coaching staff. No, in general, though, I do feel like there's something, I don't know. It just felt like this loss hurt differently than before. And when that happens, there's something about this Rapids team this year that I feel like you don't want to mess with them. When
fuel that fire,
yeah,
spark it a little bit.
And they're ready to get a win here at home. Yeah. That's been really important to Chris Armas, and from the beginning when he came in here, he was pretty adamant about how special he felt like this fan group was, and so.
Get
I think everybody should be there.
Get them a win.
I think
Get
everybody should be there.
I'll
match
be there.
Against LAFC is Saturday, March 30th, 2 p.m. here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
right here
in Colorado.
Let's go.
So go to coloradorapids.com to get tickets. You're going to want to be there. It is going to be, yeah, a good one. We'll see if my tactics are
lit.
Implemented.
They don't say that anymore, Drew. Oh. We're getting old.
Welcome back to The Conversation. We are so excited to be joined by Ruth Fahy. How are you, Ruth?
I'm very good, thank you. You nearly nailed pronunciation.
Okay, so
go
you
again.
Say it.
Fahy.
Fahy.
Fahy. Fahy.
You
That's
say
pretty
it,
good.
Drew,
That's pretty
closer.
Good. It's pretty good.
Ruth Fahy.
It's I think we'll realize later in this podcast that we are not very good at
it. Won't be the first time today.
Yeah. I don't even know. Like, that's just a prediction because we have a fun game planned. And
I will say the Irish accent is one of my favorites.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's nice.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your favorite accent, Ruth?
American, U.S., of course.
Really?
Yeah. No.
But there's a lot. I was like, there's a lot of different American accents. Okay, what's yours?
Mine is really actually, sorry, Australian. Love Australia.
Yeah.
Love the Northern Irish accent. It's a very, very different to Republic of Ireland. And I forget I have an accent until someone points it out. But no, I love you. I love the way you guys speak. I love it. I'm always imitating my colleagues in the office and it does not go down well. So.
Yeah, well, feel free to imitate us at any point in this podcast because...
That's what we're here for.
Exactly. Well, Ruth is the Vice President of Club Administration and Compliance here at the Rapids. And that's a long title and we'll get into it. But I think we just need to get into first with introducing people to who you are. You just mentioned you have an accent. Where are you from? And we want to get to know you a little bit more. So, yeah, let's just start there. Where'd you grow up, Ruth?
So originally I was born in Dublin, capital. Don't tell people in the West that. So I moved out to Galway, west of Ireland, when I was 8. So I would consider myself a Galway girl very much, yeah. Through and through. Grew up on the West Coast, went to college in Limerick, which is also on the West Coast. And then there's like a long meandering kind of pathway to coming here. I don't know, do you guys want a summary of that? It's kind of difficult to piece it all together, but I went to college in Limerick. I did a year in Pittsburgh on a soccer scholarship, which uh-huh. I really loved. Didn't like strategize very well. I took a year out before my final year, came and just played soccer. It was always soccer first, like everything else came second. Did the year there, went back, finished my degree in law, and then just kind of traveled around, bounced around a lot. Wasn't super passionate about law at the time. Don't know if I ever really am, but like I just wasn't sure which way I wanted to go. Like I loved physio, like biology, the sciences. So I was thinking maybe become like an athletic trainer. And then, yeah, found myself back. Went via the UK, studied sports law, did a master's in sports law, back to Galway. And then I just prioritized like playing soccer in our League of Ireland. So our league is pretty new, kicked off in 2011. My hometown were kicking off in 2013. So I played there for 2 seasons. Again, like soccer first, like job second, and then whatever else fell in between. Did a quick year. I went back to study dietetics. So I thought I wanted to be a sports nutritionist for a while. I get these notions now and then I realized I don't really want to do it. and then again, soccer first, went and played at Wexford Youths, had an unbelievable time there. We competed in the Champions League. We won the treble. That was like best year ever. Tore my ACL at the end of that season, and then after that kind of shifted to okay, what's after soccer and how am I going to actually make some money in the world, because mm-hmm. like it's an amateur game back home. It's kind of amateur, semi-pro, pro now. It's a real hybrid mix. We're in the very early stages back home, so yeah, focus on qualifying. Got through that brutal legal traineeship for 3 years. If anyone's worked in a big commercial law firm, it's tough. It's really, really tough. But it was worth it for what I learned. And worked briefly with my old club in Galway. That was one of the most difficult but most important, I'd say, working experiences in my lifetime. Took me a while to recover from the experience, I'll be honest. Then bounced back into law and back over here to Denver.
You're so adaptable is what I hear.
Yeah, I think it's very true. Like I think that's how I was in the pitch as well. Like I was kind of someone who you can play in many different positions, adaptable, flexible. I think I'm willing to like be the idiot. And like in a new space, I think when you're starting new jobs, you come in and for the first couple of months, you feel like really thick, like you just don't know what you're doing. And I think I'm kind of comfortable in that space because I know you always break through it. You always kind of get through the first couple of months and then, yeah, you settle in. So I think it's taken me longer probably here. Like it's usually like the 6 month mark in like a new job, I feel, that you kind of settle and find your pace, find your rhythm. Yeah. And it's probably just happened now just because of all the newness. So new culture, new language, or new
kind of sometimes
new language, but new everything. Driving on the right hand side of the road, I found very difficult. I think I talked to you about that before, Jordan. Yep. Yeah, I was like, this is really, really hard. And then I've just kind of now this season, like found my feet and yeah, starting to get into rhythm and like starting to really, really enjoy it now.
I love that little summary. I think that is really interesting of...
I'm 15 months in. I haven't found my feet. So you're beat.
That's not true.
But the real like thread through all these things is the love of football, right? The love of so many different aspects of the game. Do you remember, Ruth, when it was in your upbringing when you were like, this is the game I love. I can't get enough of this.
Yeah, great question. Like I do remember vividly. So when I made that move, my parents made the move from Dublin west to Galway. We moved to, I was saying, an unconventional school. My mom's a bit of a hippie. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. And it's kind of, yeah, in the early stages of this kind of new school where we had no uniform, with very, very small classes and we were mixed classes and they're mostly boys. So I was in a class, I think I went into third class. So it would have been 8, 9. There was 2 girls and maybe 12 boys or something like that. So the only thing to do at break time was to play football and soccer interchangeably.
Yeah, I did too.
Play soccer. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I feel less bad. And then I picked it up and like, yeah, I was like one of the guys. I was one of them and I loved it. Like loved break time, loved soccer. And from there, that kind of set the pathway. So I remember falling in love. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at that age, so about 8, 9, I'd say.
Yeah, I love that. Did you? That's like where I feel like I loved the game too.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember playing in school too at recess.
We played American football at recess.
Of course,
all
you
the
did.
Time.
You're from Texas.
Yeah, exactly. What was there? Was there a club that you supported growing up? Was there a local club or was there a big?
Yeah,
English club or
there? Well, my dad was a United supporter, Man United, so we didn't have a choice. We were born into
before
it.
Before you said that,
yeah, it's been a tough couple of years, Jordan. So yeah, we were born into it in that sense. And then I always supported my local club, like Galway United. So like I have a huge love and passion for the League of Ireland. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique niche passion. You know, it's a league that's gone through a lot of challenges and continues to do so, but it's in a great place. I will say it's better than it ever has been. And used to love going to Galway United games with my dad or with my friends. And then my actual local club was Salthill Devon. So joined them at around, I think I was 10, 11, 12, around that age group. We had an under 12 girls team. And then we had nothing until senior. So this was, I know, like this was literally where we were at back then. So myself and my friend Maeve, we were overage and we were 13 and we begged the senior manager to let us play. And he's like, no, you're too small. You're too small. Finally, at 14, after a year of begging, he let us play. So he put us each on like one wing to protect us because we were small and they were bigger.
Put them on the outside.
Yeah, and played senior from then on in. And we have some great memories. We had a really successful team and that's kind of where it all started, like from an organized point of view.
Gosh, it's cool that you stuck with it because I know that is something here in the U.S. that a lot of girls stop playing sports like middle school age. And I would imagine that would be the same case when you don't even have a team to play on. But like, talk about passion to beg a coach to say, hey, let me play with the 18-year-olds because I love this game so much. Like, gosh, that's a testament to really what you already had like a vision of what life could look like, right?
Yeah, and all I knew is that I loved training. Like some people say, you know, I think you'll get a mix with this. Some people say they hated training and love matches, like love games, love playing. I was kind of the opposite. Like I got really nervous around playing games, like super nervous, even all the way up to when I was like 27, 28. But I loved training. I just like, I'm someone like, give me a preseason, I get excited. Like I love like getting sick at the end of a session. Like that's honestly what I'm about. Like I love that. And I will say about the club, like, it was back then, it was under 12s and senior. Now it's got like eights, nines, all the way up, all the way up. So like the changes in Ireland have been incredible, incredible in the last decade, I'd say. So, but yeah, loved training, and that's what kept me addicted all the way through, yeah. I say.
Were you a training person?
I hated training.
Wow. Why? How?
I don't know. It's training.
Yeah.
I wanted
that's
to
fair.
Play.
Like, you wanted to play. And I think
I didn't hate it.
I think that's a really interesting thing, because I agree. I do feel like there are those different sets of people. I loved training. Yeah. I loved that I could go out every single day and work on something specific and be better at that. And like really get into a nuance of something, you know, whether it was a tactic or if we're working on defending that day, or like for me personally on my left foot and the type of cross I wanted to play, whatever it was, it just is like you're in control of your development. And I think I loved that. Even now, like, I'd rather watch teams train sometimes than play. Because I find it interesting, like when Manchester United Manchester United came to Boston when I was playing there, I was like, I want to go to training. I want to see what they do to get to be the best in the world.
Yeah, completely.
Back then.
I liked it.
I wish I could feel bad for hating training, but I don't.
You don't have to.
You know what I really did? I couldn't stand warming up.
No, me neither.
Just getting the body going. Felt terrible.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Felt terrible.
But that kind of makes me feel like, now I look at some of the things that you've been able to accomplish. You have your B license. You practice law. All these things are really about the process, right? Mm-hmm. It's not about what the outcome is. It's about like, how do I get better at what I want to do? Because I know that that's going to lead to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Did you tune into that sometimes at some point in your life? Or
It's funny. Like, I remember in my 20s. Always feeling so confused, like, because I wanted to do everything. Like, I'm naturally a very, very curious person. So
maybe you get that from your mother.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
She'll love
Mom
that.
Will be happy with that.
But my dad as well. If I don't give him a shout out, he'll be very upset. So from you too, Mick, you too. I just remember, it's funny, like, when you get to a place where when you're in a real good place, you tend to forget where you were and maybe struggles that you had back a number of years ago. Like, I remember my 20s being just, yes, so a little bit chaotic, probably confused. Like, I had so many interests and I was always torn, really torn between, do I go down the science route, the physio route, or do I kind of go down the humanities, like language, English, law, that kind of route. So my method for figuring it out was like just trying both. That's kind of what I did. I tried everything. Now, that can be great. That can also be stressful. Like, it's not great financially. Like, you're kind of bouncing around an awful lot. But the process was never clear to me, but I think I knew I had to just keep upskilling. And I always knew there's never an end goal, right? Like, but I wanted to work in sport and I wanted to work in football. Mm-hmm. I wanted to work in football. That's just something I knew from a very young age. Yeah.
Yeah. Drew, one of us here, you've never won a treble, have you?
Yes, I have.
You have?
Yeah.
In where?
In MLS, in when I was in Toronto.
I was going
to learn something new every day, Jordan.
I looked at you when I was saying that, and I was like,
was I supposed to say no?
No.
Am I ruining what you're about to say?
So that's the treble couch over there.
This is the
treble. Oh, look
at you two.
Let's go.
Oh, my goodness. What an experience, right? Like, one of the hardest things to do in sport, to win multiple trophies in one year. What do you remember about that year? You next, Drew, okay?
Okay, we'll let Ruth go first.
Pipe, do you want to go first?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You sure?
Yeah, yours is probably more impressive.
Yeah, what do you remember about that year and the team winning those trophies and what that meant to you?
Yeah, I remember that year really well. And it's funny because, like I said, our league only kicked off in 2011 and I tore my ACL at 27, 28. So I only got a couple of years of proper League of Ireland football. But that club, Wexford Youths, stood out to me for so many reasons. Like, and I think the biggest thing was the characters in the squad. And that's something I've always kept in mind. And it's something I noticed, right? Like, so the first time I went training with them, most people, one by one through the session, came up to me really welcoming. Like, there was a feeling, like, there's a feeling very quickly in a squad like that. Big characters, a lot of humor, like a lot of laughter. There's got to be fun. And I think if you're having fun, that trickles into how you perform. It trickles into situations where you need each other, where you can pull each other through really tough times. So personalities, work ethic, drive. One other distinct memory is that we had somebody with the squad, Trish. She was nearly like our mom. Like she wasn't related to any of the players. She wasn't, I wouldn't say like even a licensed kind of psychology professional or anything like that. But she was like our support, and she was incredible. Like, and I think she was like a superpower for us. I always remember her as well. And then we had good facilities. We had, this might sound wild, but like having our own clubhouse, our own pitches. Like, we don't always have that in Ireland. We're often sharing. We're often taking kind of scraps from other pieces back home. So we had like a solid base. We had personality. We had really ambitious, driven winners, and we had fun. And that was a big thing. We had fun. Like, we're not getting paid, but we're having fun and we're winning. So yeah, it was a great year. Mm.
Well, you got paid, Drew.
Yeah.
Unlike Ruth, who also won in treble.
I said more.
But do you feel like that your team had some of those same threads?
Yeah, for sure. I think the banter in the locker room, it makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Just the togetherness. You know, you have to have thick skin, certainly in a locker room. but a lot of times teams go the way of the actual personality as a whole, you know. And in 2017, when I was in Toronto, we had some big personalities, some big characters, certainly, and we were a good team. But you don't win three trophies in the same year without good personalities, you know? Yeah,
and without the balance, right? It is so competitive, and so trainings every day can be ruthless at times. But to balance that with some humor, like, we're getting to do something really fun, let's enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I also think you're never going to let me live that one down.
That's okay. Listen, you knew deep down inside that
that's why I sat on this that's why I sat on this couch. I'm over here, the winners are over there, clearly. You mentioned tearing your ACL. That's something that I did, unfortunately, multiple times. Drew, also member of the ACL club. Mm-hmm. It is a very difficult injury to come back from. How much did that change your career? How much did that change your outlook on what was next, or even what's happening right now in women's football? Because it's wild, the amount of ACLs we're seeing.
Yeah, and I think when I tore my ACL, I think I was one of five in a squad that tore it.
In one year,
through the whole season. So, the impact of that was massive. And I think I only realized it a couple of years later, to be quite honest. So, in the space of maybe 12 to 18 months, I just had many, many things happen. So, I tore my ACL. I think I moved house twice. I lost a job in, like, pretty high profile, and just I had loads of stuff going on like in the background, and I think it was probably in many ways like tied into that, because going from being super disciplined in football, I would have been someone who, even though it was amateur, like I think professionalism is a mindset. I think it's a skill set and it's a mindset, and I think maybe we didn't have loads of resources, but we had commitment, and I always wanted to bring that to a team. And then when that was suddenly gone, like, I think I went from super disciplined just to super chaotic. Like, I really did. Like, I kind of, yeah, I went from very, very diligent and then didn't have a great structure. Unfortunately, I tore my ACL just outside of her season. So there was a challenge around insurance. So I had to go through the public insurance system, and that just meant I didn't get great treatment. But also, I had lost my professional mindset, and I didn't apply myself to my rehab very well either. And around the same time, I started my legal traineeship. I do my law exams. There was just so much going on, and I honestly all that came to a point by COVID. I just completely burned out. Like, I burned out. It was just too much. So it was a huge, huge factor. And I only realized it later. I was like, why was that such a crazy time? And that was a huge part of it. You know?
Yeah.
Huge part of it.
It is. It's such a, I don't know if this is the same. I think it just depends on the person, but for everybody, it's a mental. It's like more mental than it is physical. And if if you don't have the right support system, if you don't have the right mindset, if you can't see things really like sometimes hour by hour, not even day by day, but being able to turn the page and say, okay, well, that was a terrible day of my ACL rehab. Now today is going to be different. Things like that, I think you can, things can get chaotic really quickly. And it's a hard injury to come back from.
Yeah, I think everybody probably goes to some dark places with that, especially the early days of the rehab. And I was lucky, I had a good support around me and stuff, mm-hmm. but even still, you can understand how it gives you very much an appreciation of when you are healthy and physically
able
to, because it is a mental battle. And if you don't have some of the support that you, you know, deserve to have when it happens, it can be a struggle.
I feel like we've dipped into so many different areas of like your life before the Rapids. Is there anything really we've missed that you're like, this part of my development was crucial in helping me and aiding me to get the job here with Colorado?
Yeah, there's a few pieces, but I think the standout for me was, so I mentioned COVID, I took some time out after I qualified, which was great. And so just kind of went home, went to the beach a lot. That sounds glamorous. The beach is freezing in Ireland and it's really cold, but I still love it. It's so beautiful there. And I actually went back to play. So I went back to play at like 32. I had been out for probably total like 4 years. I played a bit of Gaelic football in that time, but that was it. So I went back at 32, and I went back to play with my home club. And it took me like 3 months to just really get back to speed. Like, it was really tough. Well, I was playing fullback, and then when you're playing against 16-year-old wingers, like your pride takes a serious hit. So I got over that and accepted that, and was enjoying that. And the club actually came to me and asked me, did I want to come in as chief executive with the club, that they were in a good spot and they were looking to build and grow the club. Like, and I was like, for me, remember, like, I'm someone who I wanted to work in football like my whole life. Like, we don't have many jobs like that at home. So if you want to work in football, you work for the Football Association of Ireland, or you may be lucky enough to get one of like a handful of full-time roles around clubs. It's volunteer-led, volunteer-driven. Or a mix of kind of part-time or like informal kind of contractual arrangements. So this came to me super excited, kind of many conversations and assurances later, started the job, and I think if I was going to go into it fully, I would have to give you guys like a culture lesson on Irish football, because there's some deep, dark stuff there that I kind of need to bring you through. But I think, you know, I've reflected a lot in the time. I think looking back now, on one hand, like I think I was like misled into a fictional role and fictional assurances, but really I know that like I was super naive. Like, I was super naive, I was super trusting, and I was super idealistic. And my biggest lesson for myself is that like there is no place for idealism in football, and especially in Irish football. Like, you're dealing in cold hard facts. Like, you're dealing in a stretched environment. Like, you're dealing with super volunteers who give up so much of their time. They're phenomenal people. But there were some parts of that experience that were, really important for me in my development. And I came out of that experience learning a lot about myself. And I suppose without sounding too like dramatic or sinister, like, you just have to be careful in the world. I think you just have to take care with your decisions and take care in what direction you take. And like, especially if you're ambitious, like, I'm quite independent and I'll kind of go for things. Like, you just go for it. And I learned to, like, you know, take a bit more care, go a bit slower with things, just look into things a bit more, talk to people, like, network with people. So ultimately, like, it was a really positive experience. And I learned a lot about a football club, you know, that can ultimately benefit me now. And I think probably me even going for that was helpful in terms of helping me to connect the dots to get to here. So I don't know if any of that kind of makes sense. I'm talking in circles there. I don't want to go too deep into it, but it was a good experience.
I think that's fair. And I think that, you know, before you said there were so many positives that came out of it, I was going to ask you, did you regret taking that job? Because it sounds like there's a lot in it and a lot of maybe burnt, like, you felt burnt from some of the situations that happened. But also, and maybe that's something that you've learned from dabbling in all these different things, that you can take positives out of any situation. Yeah. You know, we just talked about ACLs. I think you can take positives out of that situation and learn from growth. But maybe the biggest one is the dot that connected you from that to here, because that was a pretty, it's really through Porig, right? There was a connection that came through Porig and it got you to here, to Colorado, to, you know, not the beaches of Ireland, but the mountains of the Rockies.
The beach is here.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah, but no, you're so right. Like that's it. So after that experience with the club in Ireland, I went back into law and worked in sports law. Just because I needed to get back working quickly, and probably rush into it like I generally do. But really for me, like, again, that deep desire to work in football was still with me. So I think after about a year, working as a sports lawyer, I was just feeling the pull back, you know, and that surprised me because I thought after my experience with that club that I'd never work in football again. I'd had two very, very bad experiences working in football in Ireland. And I just thought, just give it up, Ruth, like focus on your happiness, you know. But no, I still wanted to go back into it. Like, I love it. I love it. I'm fascinated by football clubs. Love it. So I started looking at the UK, started looking at the WSL. And then I started looking over further, NWSL, maybe MLS. And I saw that the Rapids had posted a huge number of jobs. And I was connected with Porrick because, you know, we don't have many Irish football administrators who have successfully, I suppose, established themselves abroad like he has. Like, and I was connected with him on LinkedIn, reached out, look, I wanted to connect about other jobs. And then ultimately we met in Dublin, talked for hours about everything. There's always so much to talk about. And then 2 months later, I was here. And that's kind of how it all
comes
together. Yeah.
That was like a year, almost a year ago.
Yeah.
Has it seemed like a year? Has it seemed like more than a year? Has it seemed like you've lived 10 lives since then?
It does seem like longer, but in a good way, I would say. And like I mentioned before, I think last year there was a very busy, very challenging season for many, many, many reasons. Mm-hmm. But for me, like learning a new league, like the new culture, That was difficult, but it's totally manageable. It just took a little bit longer than I would have liked. But it does feel longer, but not in a bad way. Honestly, like I said, of getting to know my colleagues has been the best thing ever. I work with an unbelievable team. I love working with these guys, and everyone's so passionate, so connected with the club, and everyone's so ambitious. Like, we want to win, like, you know, and I came here to win as well, and people are grafting every day to do that.
Yeah.
And it's really inspiring. And I'm,
you know, I'm grafting?
Enjoying. Nope.
We should have put that. We should have put that on the.
You know,
I know it from Love Island, of course.
Ah, yes, Love Island. I don't even know what that is.
No, we don't use it over here, but it's like to work hard, like to put in the work.
Oh, I know grafting. Yeah,
you do. Are you just
graft all the time? I am a grafter.
I'm a grafter. Okay, grafter. You want to tell me what VP of club administration and compliance means then?
Yeah.
Since you've grafted
exactly,
so much.
It's exactly what Ruth does.
Yeah, it's a big title, right, Ruth? And I think one of the things that we are curious about is like, what does that mean? What is your day-to-day life?
You're lucky you don't have to deal with me anymore, Ruth.
Yeah.
Pretty lucky. I'm grateful for that, Ruth.
You would have stacks on your desk.
No, it's the most unglamorous title, I'd say. Like, it does.
It's long.
It's really long. So I just shorten it just for, it's just
shorten
easier.
It to grafter.
You should. Our club graft.
Oh, God. How to describe it? Yeah, this is, so the way I usually say it to people, like, look, it's a mix, like a hybrid soccery, legally, operations, compliance. And people kind of just walk away at that point. And I'm like, that's fair enough.
We will not walk away.
No, we're sitting. We're all staying.
Sounds really boring. I can tell you it's the opposite. It's absolutely not. So the way I describe it is like there's kind of three layers to it. So the kind of top layer, I think like at VP level, like every person there should be looking forward. So like, how can you help to grow the club? How can you help build the club? And how can I support our CBO, Wayne Brandt, and our president, Porrick Smith, how can I support them in any way, you know, to strive to achieve their vision and their goals? So that's a big part of it. The club admin part falls into that because my job is to help, like, evolve the club from, like, a policies, process, practices standpoint. We won't go into that. And I haven't even gotten my feet on the ground in that sense, but that's a big part. So it's just just professionalizing some of the background documentation elements of the club. So that's layer one. Layer two is kind of the compliance piece. So on the soccer ops side, I support our sporting director, our R2GM, and our academy technical director, and anything compliance related. Now, that can be honestly anything. Mm-hmm. It can be making sure we're following the MLS rules and regs. It can be making sure we're complying with the CBA, with any other MLS Next Pro, or similar kind of rules and regs, or FIFA rules and regs. On the academy side, it's very safe sport related. And that kind of brings us to the next layer, which is the kind of operational piece. So I oversee our director of soccer development, director of operations, safe sport manager, and player liaison. And they are amazing. Mm-hmm. And I love working with that group. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Then I work with our risk, HR, legal team. So the easiest way to describe compliance is like, we follow the rules. When you break those rules or there's a violation or challenge to those rules, we engage with our legal team. Yeah. So that stuff, again, like, it might sound boring, but I'm telling you guys, it is not. There is.
Sounds like a lot.
She wiped her brow.
Yeah, I actually did. I was like, finally got that all out.
She says that's it.
Yeah.
She also says H.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, how about Z?
Z.
There we go. See? We all got it. We're all on the same page. You said it's soccer and operations. And I think that this is one of the cool things. One, Ruth, you're like one of the few females in major roles within a club in MLS. So you go, girl. That's number
good.
One.
Kind of cool. I didn't really know that. So that's good.
And two, it's like, yes, you're working, you're kind of dipping into both pots that you were talking about before, like the football side, mm-hmm. and the law side, right? The what you've studied and what you've kind of also studied your whole life in the game. How have you seen that play out in some of these meetings that you're in, or your ability to talk from a player standpoint, but also from this legal standpoint?
I've only realized this year how helpful, how valuable it is that I played. Like, and not even like, I was never the best player. I didn't play for as long as other people, but having played in a competitive environment for a certain length of time is just, it stands to me like every single day. And the biggest thing is that, honestly, you can just empathize, and you can, like, I really can. Like, I really care about the coaches. I know, like, just by watching my former coaches, seeing the hours they put in, like the drive that they have, the difficult job that they have, and just remembering that all the time is really important. Obviously, you can empathize with the players, because I think a lot, and I care a lot about how supported they are, like how they're feeling, like how are they off the pitch, you know, because that's going to ultimately trickle in. Are we doing our job in that sense? So that stuff is massive, because then when you come to a table, maybe when you're having a different type of conversation, like, that's always in my head, and I can never lose that. So then hopefully I can use that empathetic side to kind of influence bigger decisions. And again, I don't know, like, I don't think about it, but it's just part of me, you know? So it's what I bring to my job from the legal compliance standpoint. I'm player driven, player focused, player first, always, always.
But it also feels like, you said this earlier about that treble team, how there was this feeling about the group, this culture. You're kind of trying to find that too, right? Within, to me, when you said that, I was like, this is what she's also trying to do with this club in a way, right? Like, create and help foster an environment that feels special.
Yeah.
Have you seen that start to develop, or what have you recognized, I would say, maybe, from this Rapids organization now being an insider, but for a while you were trying to fill it out, right? You felt like an outsider, I'm sure. But what is special about this group that you've noticed culture on the culture standpoint?
That's such a good question, because I think about it a lot, because I do care, and I'm fascinated by it, and I'm interested in, like, workplace culture. And, like, what does that even mean, right? So it's like, so how do you feel coming to work? Like, are you, the biggest thing is, like, are you supported? So no matter what level you are, like, are you supported? Do you have support from levels above and levels below? Is your team supportive? And, like, for me, I've worked in plenty of jobs where I didn't feel very supported. And I hear, no matter how busy my direct reports are, like, I know, phone call away, I've always got support. And that's really, really big. And that's a reflection on the inner workings of an organization, I think. And after that, like, I know I mentioned it earlier, like, fun. Like, you gotta have fun. Like, why are we even here in the first place? Why would you want to work in sport if you're not having fun? Like, don't have to take it all too seriously. I'm reminding myself of that all the time. I'm still like learning how to get better in that sense. But you know, we're here to kick a ball at the end of the day. Like someone said last week, like, it's not fatal. Like, we're here mm-hmm. to play sport, have fun, provide entertainment, bring people together, connect people. It's a privilege to work in sport. Like, it really is. So in stressful times, because there's plenty of them, had plenty of them lately, but like at the end of the day, we have each other, and like that support piece, that breeds winning, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, I like hearing that. And also, like, I find it really interesting because I have been in women's soccer and men's soccer. Like, there's differences and there's challenges. And honestly, sometimes I feel like more accepted for being a woman in the men's game than a female in the women's game, if that makes sense. I don't know if you feel that. Like, I feel like as a woman in the women's game, like, I didn't get to what people find as, like, successful. Whereas when I'm in the men's game, I played pro, and that is like a success enough. And I don't know if you feel differences in challenges, or maybe that's just in America. I'm sure it's different everywhere else, but
I agree, but I do find it's in America. Didn't find that at home. Genuinely didn't, but I have found that here. It's like, oh, you've played at a high level, and there's like this, yeah, there's a level of respect, like an automatic level that comes with that I'm not used to.
Yeah.
And I kind of downplay it. I'm like, no, like I wasn't that good. I only played this, you know, and they're like, no, you want to travel, you played Champions League twice. I'm trying to pull it down. I'm like, guys, yeah, but it's Ireland. Like, and I shouldn't do that. Yeah. Like, it's not fair in Ireland that I love very much. But it's such a good point. I do feel respected mm-hmm. here, and I do feel welcomed, and I do feel like I get to sit at, you know, a technical lead table with some really experienced, fascinating people. I just get to sit and listen into those conversations. Like the three I mentioned earlier, our sporting director, our 2GM and academy director, like listening to those guys talk, I love that. Like mm-hmm. favorite part of my day, love listening to them. I'm learning from them all the time. But I feel part of that too. And they, right. you know, I'm invited into the conversation, which mm-hmm. I'm really grateful for. Like, I don't take that lightly. And I hope I can bring value as well. Yeah. That's the main piece.
No, you totally do.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Embrace it. Embrace that.
Yeah. And we even let Drew sit on the couch with you, even though you have Champions League exactly. appearances, like, and he doesn't.
Jordan.
No,
I got that one right. Right. But it is about having fun. And Ruth, let's have some fun. We are going to play a game with you, and we're calling it a gander at Gaelic.
Okay.
Is that a good name?
This is a great name. Great name.
Okay. So the idea behind it is, you know, we don't know Irish words. Like you said, you had to learn a new language. You met League. But I also feel like there's a new language, right? Cultural things happen, and slang is different everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. So you're going to give us a few words. We're going to, one, try to say them, Drew. Mm.
Oh my gosh.
And two, we're going to try to figure out what it means.
Oh no.
So I don't know, Drew, you want to go first?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Drew's first at a gander at Gaelic.
This is actually Irish, so if you know this,
I know
it'll
Gaelic
be very,
oh,
very
well, then I'll know
so,
it for sure.
That Gaelic is like a it's a language.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's these are more Irish slang.
Yeah, so it's actually I've mixed it up, so just to really confuse you guys. So
no,
it's probably one or two Irish words and the rest is Irish slang, like in English.
Okay, great, so, perfect. All right.
The first one is an Irish word, so it's gra, G-A-O-R-F-A-D-A, gra.
I mean, you're not supposed
oh,
to
no,
tell
you're
us.
Supposed to show it to him, so he's supposed to say it. Would you have said gra?
So I'm showing it. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
Gra.
So turn it around like the camera can get it too.
Okay.
Like you're on a...
We'll do wait,
Ruth, hold on. Don't
say it, though.
Let him figure out what it is first.
Okay, go on.
What this means?
Yeah.
Goal.
No.
What do you mean? That's gra, right?
It's like a...
So I have the gra. I have such gra for soccer.
Oh, love.
There you go. You got it.
1-0, Jordan.
You can also, so after the other person says it, you can say, can you use it in a sentence? Like, where the spelling be?
Oh, Ruth.
Okay, Ruth, what's the next word? I'm knackered. Oh, I know that. You know knackered?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Just exhausted, tired.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I like this.
Try to read it.
I would say minus crike.
I think it's crack.
There you go.
Crack.
Minus crack.
Minus crack.
What's the I doing there?
Is it minus?
Yeah.
Minus crack.
So okay, you're either good crack or you're minus crack.
Oh. You don't feel good. You're not into it.
You're, what about you, Drew? Like, no crack. Like, you're dry shite. You're no fun. Yeah.
No fun. I'm minus crack.
You always, you're like very self deprecating.
Drew is minus crack.
All right. Next.
Does that work?
Oh, is that one me or you? I'll do it. Banjixed. Banjaxed.
That sounds French. Banjaxed. You were, it was pretty close. Banjaxed. Yeah, Banjaxed. Okay. Any ideas? Wait,
It's like somebody that performs on the corner, like a fiddle with a banjo.
I can see why you'd say that, but no.
How could you see why she?
Because a banjo, it looks like banjo.
No, like if you're like the car is banjaxed, or you're banjaxed, or I'm banjaxed.
Oh.
Like you're banjaxed. I'm probably banjaxed at this
stage. Super.
No. Yeah. You're just like, is it super?
No.
No, it's like, what? It's a car, it's like rough.
Like wrecked.
Yeah, wrecked. Yeah,
wrecked. Yeah.
Why'd you look at me when you said you're
banjaxed? I mean, like if we're like old and banjaxed, like that's, I'm saying I am.
Because you're wearing myself. A hat again.
I am too.
Yeah.
You're wearing a hat again, Drew.
I'm just... No, I'm only I'm totally messing with you guys.
Banjaxed.
I'm young.
Drew's hair is hair. Banjaxed.
Right, next.
Oh. Can you say it, Drew?
Chancer.
Yeah, it's good. Chancer.
Okay, what do you think it is?
Somebody who takes chances.
Oh, great. Like, literal meaning, yes. But
yeah.
No, though. No. No.
I keep thinking, like, the Chancellor, like, from... Is that the Lorax?
Listen, just because it looks like that.
No.
Jordan.
It's like he or
it's like a little man that lives among the trees.
So if someone's a chancer, they're a messer. They're like a little messer. They're bold, like messer.
When you say it with the accent,
what'd you say? A messer?
A messer. Like a chancer.
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 Like that.
Chancer. He's a chancer.
All right.
I am so bad at accents. I'm not even going to try.
Last one.
The Jacks. I love that. It's the beach you used to always go to.
No, it's the pub you always used to go to.
No, it's not.
The still go to.
No, can I tell you?
Yeah.
It's the restroom. So I'm going to the Jacks.
Oh.
Not the beach.
Well, speaking of the Jacks, I feel like it's that time.
Yeah, I could probably use the
Jacks. Well, this has been so fun. And one of the things you talked about was R2 Academy, talking to all the different levels of this club. And I want to remind everybody that the home opener for R2 is against LAFC2, Sunday, March 31st, which is Easter at 6:30. 6 p.m. Mountain Time at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. And R2 won their first game in the Open Cup. Let's go. They're playing in the second round against Northern Colorado Hailstorm. Battle of the Colorado Elements happening Wednesday, April 3rd, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. I am struggling with the times. Here at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, for both of those things, you can get tickets at rapids96.com/R2. Ruth, gosh, it's been good to get to know you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Really enjoyed that, guys.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed it. Wipe your brow. It's done. We do have one more thing for you, though. We, you know, you're talking about culture, and one of the things we're trying to cultivate with this podcast is just being grateful. Like, we get to do something so cool once a week. You guys get to do this every day within the club, like being a part of building something. And it's nice to have a little gratitude. So we're giving you an opportunity to give thanks to someone near, far, whatever, wherever you want to give that thanks. You can give a little shout out right here.
Oh, yeah. That's got to be to my family. 100%. Yeah. To my mom, my dad, sister Kira, brothers David and Simon, and my dog Miles. Because they've kept me going through the tough days. So love you guys. Thank you for everything.
Love that. Family is everything.
Yep.
So we're glad that you have made this your family here in America. We're so happy to have you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it. Thanks, thank you so much.
And yeah. I'm glad you got Miles in there.
That's important. Yeah. Never forget.
Me too. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this week's The Colorado Rapids podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode.